Don, have you heard this story about Jeff Merrick?
No, I don't think so.
Jeff Merrick, who's a recent first-round NHL draft pick. Jeff Merrick, who's a recent first-round NHL draft pick, may be spoiling his career because of a video game addiction, Jeff Merrick is the analyst who has the story.
Awesome. I want to thank.
By the way, Jeff, you are a first round pick in our hearts and minds.
Thanks, Elliot. Thanks, Emil. I really appreciate that, guys. That's Pete Rosenberg, ESPN Radio, saying something that I've always wanted to hear about myself, that I'm a first round draft pick in the NHL. My whole life, Elliot, just dreamed about that being a reality. It's
like
funny.
I said, you are a first-round pick at
thank
Rogers.
Thank you. I want to thank Mike Ajello, by the way, for sending across that audio pretty much as soon as it popped up. Thank you, Mike, for bringing that to my ears. Listen, this was about the video game story and the one prospect who has a certain issue / addiction with video games. It's interesting because after we released the podcast last week, I'm sure you got tons of questions about it as well. Who's the guy? Who's the guy? Who's the guy? A, I won't say who it is. B, and this is where a lot of people took exception with me, I won't say who it's not, because I don't want to sort of go market to market and say, hey, it's not your guy, because then eventually by process of elimination, it's going to be pretty obvious who the player is. But what I found, and Elliot, I'm not sure if you found the same thing, I had a couple of teams reach out to me and say that we've had similar issues and have similar concerns. This is at the pro level and at the junior hockey level as well. So I think that this is probably more of a story than just a one-off, you know, kid that's staying up till 4 or 5 in the morning playing video games every night and then has no energy to work out, to perform, or to play the next day. I think this is a bigger story than just the one kid.
Look, like the Toronto Maple Leafs hosted an event a couple of summers ago where they sold out, I think, the Air Canada Center over a weekend for a video game tournament. And they were blown away. Mm-hmm. Like it used to be, and everybody still competes for the UFC dates, right? Because they've got a loyal fan base, they spend a lot of money, and they drink a lot. And that's kind of what you like. Now, this is the next level. We've seen in California, they've built 5,000 to 10,000 seat studio stadiums to have these events. Madison Square Garden sold out an event. You know, as I mentioned, the Air Canada Center did too. Do we think that the only people who are into this are kids who don't want to get exercise and just want to sit in front of a TV all day? No, it's all kids. I remember reading once that Kobe Bryant was big into one of these games. And if you're going to tell me that, 10% of 18-year-olds are going to have problems where they're too addicted, do you think pro sports is going to escape that? Not a chance. Yeah. I guarantee the one guy you were thinking of is not the only one. And by the way, I did have people ask me, did Jeff tell you who he was talking about? And I said, no. I said I didn't want to know because I knew I was going to get that question. I didn't want to have to lie to anyone.
What is it? Sports is a microcosm for society.
Right.
Like anything that plagues regular society plagues sports as well. And addictions come in a lot of different forms. They can be substance or they can be video games. I know it's funny because when it was told to me, you know, the person that mentioned it to me was like, you know, you may sort of chuckle when I tell you this, but it is a serious problem. And you think, oh, video game addiction, ridiculous. But there are a lot of kids that play video games. And I'm not suggesting for one second that, you know, hockey players that, you know, play video games till 2 a.m. are throwing their careers away if they do so. But if you take it to a certain level, it does affect the rest of your life. And
sure,
it happens in regular society. And there's no reason to believe that it wouldn't happen in sports. And specifically, no reason for the purpose of this podcast to believe that it wouldn't happen in hockey. But I'm not interested in entertaining, you know, fishing trips. I'm not interested in shooting down, you know, is it my guy talk? And I know one market specifically was livid at me.
Vancouver?
For not doing that. I can neither confirm nor deny.
Does it start with a van and end with a Coover?
And end with a Coover? I can neither confirm nor deny for the purposes of this podcast. But I just don't want to get into, you know, going. It's funny because Max Jones, Anaheim Ducks prospect, put out there on Twitter, hey, it's not me. You care to comment, Jeff? And I've known Max going back to when he was with the London Knights and sort of had a fun time with it on Twitter with him. But
JT Brown put out something too.
Oh, did he? What did JT put out?
He just said, I think he said also it wasn't me. Because that was the name a lot of people asked me about. Like, is he referring to JT Brown? Because JT Brown is very open about, hey, I'm going on Twitch, which for those of you who aren't familiar, it's a platform a lot of the gamers use where people can see them play. You know, he's a guy who talks a lot about going on and playing games. And so a lot of people assumed it was kind of him. And I think he put out someone told me he put out something saying, you know, it's not me either. But I know what you're referring to with Vancouver. And I did have someone say to me that you watch Uolevi, people are going to guess it's him. And it's really unfortunate for the kid. The only reason that people think it's him is because he hasn't played in the NHL yet, not because that there's any reason to believe it's actually true. Poor kid.
Anyway, I suspect this is a story that's not going to go away, considering, you know, a couple of teams reached out, and you've heard from teams as well, and I think, you know, eventually where there's going to be... Listen, wasn't there a story in the NFL not too long ago about someone that that was open about how addictive video games has been for him and how it affected his career? Not sure who it is, but... Listen, every sport, every walk of life, hockey's no different.
Well, Jeff, the key thing is now, you will always go down now as the guy who talked about the video game addiction on that podcast.
Well, I thought you were going to say I was a first-round draft pick, according to Pete Rosenberg at ESPN.
Yes, you are a first-round.
That made my day.
The player that you're talking about is Quinn Pitcock.
Oh, okay. NFLer.
Yes, in 2012, it came out about how his career was over. Let's see. He was a defensive lineman, a third-round pick of the Indianapolis Colts in 2007, admitted the transition into NFL was difficult for him, said he was introverted, had some mild depression, and he retired before the start of training camp. His second season, rash decision, and he was playing Xbox Online for up to 18 hours a day, sleeping for maybe 4 or 5 hours, and he was playing Call of Duty. That, by the way, is also the game I believe Kobe Bryant loved, but obviously it didn't affect his career.
Okay, good to see someone's done their homework on this. So well done, Elliot, to no one's surprise. And on that... Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Terrain.
I would be hard-pressed to come up with 31 thoughts on any topic, but I can manage one thought about Elliot and Jeff. Working with them from the beginning of their careers, I remember one quality that they both have in abundance is curiosity. They were constantly asking questions, learning, and even more impressively, retaining all of that information. So I guess you could say that they are both curious people. Now, I don't mean they're curious people like curiously strange people. I mean they're curious people. Or maybe I mean both. So I guess that's two thoughts.
Who started a lot of careers, including mine and yours, Scott Metcalf. That is our national news director at Rogers, and he started a lot of careers, Jeff, including yours and mine.
Wonderful man, super talented. And the thing I'll always remember about Scott, always available, always helpful, always accessible, and always had time for you. Like when I started, man, I was like what's below part-time? Because that's what I was.
I was like that too. I was a volunteer.
Yeah. Like I was that guy. And
basically just do anything that they ask you to do. There's a story I tell that when I first started out, I was a volunteer at the Fan in Toronto. And it was like my first month working in as a freebie in the newsroom. And I was going away for Victoria Day weekend. So this would be actually 24 years ago last weekend, 1994. And I was dating someone who was supposed to go away for the weekend. And he called me up like on the Wednesday and he said, Elliot, I need someone to do news backup on Monday morning from 3 to 10 a.m. And I'll pay you $80. and it was going to be the first time I was ever paid.
Whoa.
And I was like, oh, I'm supposed to go away with someone for the weekend. He goes, no problem. I can go get someone else. And I was like, nope. That, you know, snaps you back to my senses. And I'm like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I'll take it. He goes, you sure? He goes, oh, yeah. I'm taking it. And so I called up the girl I was dating at the time, and I said, I got to come back early because I got my first paid news shift at the station. And I'll never forget this. She said, you know, you have a choice. It's either me or the job.
No. Are you serious?
Yeah. And that was the last time we spoke.
Oh, no. So Scott Metcalf broke you up.
Yes. Scott Metcalf sent me on a long list of unintended celibacy. It's funny. I always tell that story when I'm speaking to people at classes or young people starting out. I just say, like, there's no point in being with anybody if they're not going to be supportive of your career, right, or your path. But I always remember that because that was my first paid shift in radio.
So essentially you broke up with someone for $80.
Yes, that's what it was. At that point in time, that was a pretty expensive dinner.
I was going to say. All right, the topics at hand. Let's start off with the drama in Toronto, which continues. Mark Hunter exits the Toronto Maple Leafs. Lou Lamoriello exits the Toronto Maple Leafs. Lou Lamoriello lands with the New York Islanders in a position above that of Garth Snow. He will make the hockey decisions. What's your initial analysis of everything that's transpired in Toronto since the last time that we spoke?
I'm not surprised by any of it. I don't see why anybody would be surprised by what has happened. As a matter of fact, I was surprised that the Maple Leafs kind of trotted Brendan Shanahan out everywhere the last couple of days, you know, to defend all this. To me, that's almost like you're playing defense. I don't think you need to play defense. I think everybody kind of understood that this was going to happen. You make your decisions and you stick by them and you move forward. I don't think the Maple Leafs need to defend everything. I think we all knew when Kyle Dubas took over this job that Mark Hunter was short for Toronto. And we also knew that if Lou Lamoriello found another option, he would be short for Toronto. I think everybody rationally thought that. You know, Jeff, I'm already tired of the social media debate about it,
the mainstream
media debate about it. It's not even about who thinks who's right. It's all preconceived notions, right? Like, I've got my side of the trench and you've got your side of the trench. It's like the front in World War One. You know, like, everybody's going to come from a bias. I think Toronto made their choice. They've got to live with their choice. They've got to move on. I'm not surprised Lamoriello went to the Islanders. Those rumors started almost immediately. I'm not surprised Hunter moved out. I think that those rumors started almost immediately. I think we're all curious to see where Hunter's going to be on July 15th once he's able to work again. And now I think Toronto's going to go about, you know, just, they're going to have to plug some holes. Like, you've got to plug Lamoriello's hole, like the almost the godfather Tom Hagen consigliere. They're going to plug Kyle Dubas's old hole. Who's going to be that assistant general manager? And they've got to plug Mark Hunter's hole. Like, who's going to be your top scout?
Hello?
Elliot, can you hear me? It's Merrick.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, thankfully, my hotel here in Regina is right across the street from the radio studio, so I was able to get over here at CJME. Have Elliot Friedman on the phone, because, Fried, we're doing an insert into the podcast this week. It is Thursday. It is May 24th as we insert this, because Lawrence Gilman has been hired by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm surprised. Like, I see it. Like, I see what they're doing. He's going to replace Kyle Dubas at Dubas's old job, it sounds like, you know, running the Marlies and things like that. But it's funny, like, I know Lawrence and I didn't see it coming. So I'm really happy for him. When he got fired in Vancouver a few years ago, it's been a tough road back getting back in. But I'm, you know, obviously I'm happy for him personally. And I think it's the first step in the Maple Leafs, you know, kind of reshaping their front office. And now I think they start to look for the person who's going to replace Lou Lamoriello. I think Gilman's a really smart guy, and I think he'll be a really good addition, because I think he's got a good grasp on the league and ideas for succeeding in it.
We know him from his work with, as you mentioned, Mike Gillis with the Vancouver Canucks. But for those that might not be familiar with Lawrence Gilman, what he does, what his strengths are, you've known him for a long time. Fill in some blanks here for us, Friedge.
Well, he's from Winnipeg. He's a lawyer by trade. Like, there's a big sports lawyers conference every year, and people like Julien Brisebois from Tampa go there, and I think Jeff Solomon from the Kings is a guy who goes there. Rick Olchek, who works at Carolina, is another guy who goes there, and he attends that, so that's his background. You know, he worked in Arizona for a while, and he saw a lot. Like, and that was an organization where they had to battle to succeed, so he kind of saw life in the NHL from that end. And then when he went to Vancouver, he saw life in the NHL from the other end. And, you know, the one thing about him that he really was good at, as much as anything else, was he sold a lot of those Canucks players on, if you take a little less, we will make it work here. And we will make sure that anything we don't spend on you, we will spend on somebody else to help us win. And he helped sell that to the Sedins, to Burrows, all those guys.
Yeah. He told us that on the podcast a while ago, that I think Alex Burrows was one of those guys. They had that decision, do they move him or re-sign him, I want to say. And I think Burrows was the one player specifically he talked about in using that pitch to sell him on Vancouver.
Well, I think the other thing, too, is the one thing I remember about that, too, is they got Burrows signed to, I think, a four-year deal at $8 million. And then when that contract came up, I remember he said to me that they knew they had to do right by Burrows and give him more. It was not only that he understood in the moment what they had to do to get everybody to convince him to take less, but the next time after that, the Sedins took a little bit more, Burrows got a little bit more. You know, they knew that they had to reward those guys, especially as they kind of fell a bit. They knew they had to reward those guys who took a bit less, and they bumped them all up. And he's the guy who devised the expansion draft, right? Like, it was his baby. So he's a creative thinker. He's a different thinker. He's got a lot of good ideas. And also, he ran the AHL team quite a bit when he was in Vancouver. So, you know, he'll have a lot to do with it here in Toronto.
You know, when him and Mike Gillis were with the Vancouver Canucks, I mean, they did a lot of progressive things. I remember you did a feature on rest
the
and
sleep.
Recuperation.
Yeah.
The various sleep studies. How much of that was Gilman's initiative?
The one thing that I remember Mike Gillis telling me was when he got the job in Vancouver, he said it was right around, I don't remember the exact year, it was right around 2010. So they'd been a franchise for 40 years and they'd never won. And his thing was, we got to try different things. And that's sleep sciences. Now almost everybody does it. Like, a bunch of NBA teams took it after that. And one thing that is very big with the Maple Leafs is sports science. They are big into this. Like, elsewhere in our podcast, you asked me if they would hire more analytics. I think that they will even more beef up their sports sciences. I think that he is a guy who, because Vancouver, their travel was different and stuff like that, they were really big into that kind of thing. So, yes, I think that's a good point. He will be up to date and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, very good.
The other thing that's really interesting about all of this is, I think Lawrence was talking to the ECHL about being its next commissioner, so I don't know where that's going. Obviously, he's not going there.
No, this is a little bit of a higher tax bracket. Nice position for Lawrence Gilman. Okay, well, we'll call you later on when more news breaks, so stand by your phone.
I'm going back to bed.
See you, Friedge.
All right, take care.
I believe Dubas has always had a plan, and same with Shanahan. I think they knew this was going to happen, and now they're going to execute their plan.
So that becomes, I'm going to get to Hunter and Lamoriello here in a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
But on the Toronto page, people that might want to come back, people locally that would be interested in those positions that are now available in the Maple Leafs organization, where do you think they're at there?
Well, you know, you have mentioned a name that I think is very much in the mix, and you mentioned it last week,
Clark?
And that's Wes Clark. Yes, he's got a long history with Dubas, and I don't think anybody would be surprised. But, you know, the one thing is that I saw some people say, well, you know, Toronto's going to have trouble hiring people. You know, Shanahan, Dubas, they got rid of these guys, and nobody's going to want to go there. I think that's garbage. I think it is pure garbage. Number one, the team is rising, and a rising tide floats all boats. Number two, I don't think they're going to have any difficulty finding people who want to work with a team that's going to have the resources and the desire to win that the Toronto Maple Leafs do. I don't think it's going to be a problem at all. if you look at some guys from the Toronto area, this is just beyond contract status, okay? These are just guys that I think would be available or interested. You know, Sean Burke won a bronze medal with Team Canada at the Olympics, works for Montreal, long history with Brendan Shanahan. He's a Toronto area guy I could see having interest. Mike Fuda, LA Kings. I don't know what his contract situation is there. You know, Fuda's been a guy who's interviewed in Buffalo. He's interviewed in Carolina. I don't know, would he want to come to Toronto and run the scouting for Dubas? They know each other for the OHL. He's another guy I could see being in the mix. St. Louis, a good drafting team, has two Toronto area guys, Rob DeMaio, who's from Toronto, Bill Armstrong, who's also, I believe, from Toronto. Like, those are guys who've done a good job for St. Louis, and they're Toronto area guys. Scott Housen from Edmonton, the former GM in Columbus, who just interviewed by phone in Carolina. I think he could be another guy who would be interested in doing that. Like, these are all guys with scouting in their background who are from the Toronto area who I think would love to come home. And I haven't spoken to any of them. It's just purely me throwing their names out there. Like, if Kyle Dubas wants to go out there and cast a net, there's going to be a lot of guys who would, quote unquote, love to come home and work for that team, I think.
And to the issue of how can they let Mark Hunter go before the draft, I find curious because your lists are already done. Like, everything's sort of all in place right now for the draft. Like, you'll have your final meetings before, you know, June in Dallas, but pretty much everything's done, isn't
it? Well, they know what Hunter thinks, right?
Yeah.
They know what Hunter thinks. They know what where he's going. And
like, I guess essentially my question is there any hurry-up offense here to fill these positions ASAP?
I think you should have them fill if you can. I do. I think if you can get people, you should fill them now. Because I'm a big believer, when you go into the draft, it's not only ranking the draft, it's intel. What's the time now where most of the moves get made? It's the draft. Like, the other name I didn't mention, like, for the Consigliere role, okay, so Ron Francis? Well, we've talked about him, but the word is, and who knows if it's right or wrong, but the word is that he wants to take a year off. You know who I'd be going after? I'd be going after Chuck Fletcher. And not just because you have Cliff there. Mm-hmm. I would want somebody from another organization. He knows what every team wants, right? He's been having these conversations all year. That's what I want. I want the intel. Okay, when you were in Minnesota, what did you think? And when you talked to that team, what did they think? What can you tell us about the other 30 teams that we don't know already? What do you know about us that maybe we didn't know was out there?
Know a lot of this, though, from his
I think
position?
He would, but you can never have enough.
Right.
Like, that intro that Emil just played for us, what did Scott Metcalf say about us? We were annoying because we asked a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. I think that Kyle Dubas would be the same kind of way. What I want to know everything.
Does he, this is one for the analytics crowd out there, sorry, the information crowd out there, does he beef up that department?
Yes.
Does that department all of a sudden become the envy of the NHL?
I think there'll be more. I think they're going to beef up everything. Like, I think they're going to beef up a ton of stuff.
Where do the Islanders go with Lou Lamoriello?
Well, one thing I do believe, right now is I believe that they are on a full court press on Tavares now. They are trying to get this done.
Do you think the hiring of Lou is directly related to securing John Tavares long term?
I do think that they felt they were worried that they lost him and this is their Hail Mary. And I think it's put them back in the conversation. I think Tavares is willing to listen. This is my opinion, Jeff. I think the Islanders thought he was gone.
And then Lou happened?
And then they're like, okay, we have to take another chance. And our other chance is this is our guy. And they met, and I think he's going to think about it. And I think they're putting on all the stops. I can't prove it, but my intuition tells me Kovalchuk is a big part of this plan.
To the Islanders?
Yes.
Because he's been like married to the Rangers from the get-go.
Yeah, but I think they'll say, what do you think about Kovalchuk? We'll get him. This is just my belief.
Do you not get concerned when you let someone get that close? Like, you're this close to July 1st. You know, why not just go and see what's out there?
I mean, that's the question from his point of view for sure. But if I'm the Islanders, No, I'm doing everything I can not to let it happen.
So what does this mean for Gar Snow and his role there?
I think
essentially Lou's got both hands.
Well, I think he's still going to have a role, but Lou's going to be in charge.
What could the role be then?
I don't know. I mean, you always need people, right?
Man,
like, I think the biggest thing is, like, what if Hunter ends up there in mid-July? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the one thing I think about Lamorello is, one thing I believe, actually, I shouldn't say I believe this. I think I wonder about this. Sometimes it benefits you to see how someone else does things. Lou Lamorello was in New Jersey for almost 30 years. And he only saw, and it was his way, and it was the only way. He goes to Toronto, he sees another way of doing things. How much of that is Lou Lamorello going to take with him? Like, I think he, if Lamorello was smart, and I think he's smart, I think he's saying, I got to have Hunter with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can find players.
He can.
I can't believe I'm getting sucked into this. But Jeff, like, someone says to me, who is Hunter really found? And I'm like, what? And he says, like, who is Hunter really found? And he goes, you're not giving him credit for Matthews. I'm like, no, I'm not giving him credit for Matthews. It was the number one pick. You should get that right. But yeah. I'm like, okay, well, he stuck to his guns with Marner.
That's the big one.
That's a fourth overall pick.
That's a huge one.
You know, Zaitsev did not have a great year this year, but he had a good year last year, and I think there's still a chance that he's a player.
Travis Dermott.
Dermott looks like he's going to be a player. And that was one where Dermott and Kyle Dubas worked really well together because Dubas kept trading back and adding picks. But, like, Hunter had been in Toronto for, what, 3-4 years? When you're a draft guy, you know, it takes that long. But if Johnsson turns out as a late pick, that's a big swing and a connection. Yeah. Like, I had people saying to me, like, Hunter didn't find anyone. Anyone could have picked Matthews. I'm like, really? Like, to me, that's almost as dumb as some of the Dubas takes. Like, it's, I just can't believe how people on both sides of the aisle are completely unwilling to give the other side any credit here for this.
It's like we talked about last week. This is the audit on this style of management. This is the audit on, you know, the wise and veteran hand on the wheel versus, you know, the young kid who just wants to push the pedal to the floor.
But if I'm Lamorello, I'm looking at Hunter and I'm saying, I need that guy in New York. Mm-hmm. Like, the Islanders, they have some guys who work really hard. Like I was talking about to someone the other day about some of the futures of some of the people in New York. And there's a guy I know who goes overseas. And he told me a guy who works for the Islanders. His name is Kerry Guider. Okay. He's a very quiet guy. You know, I don't really know him that well. I've seen him before to say hi. He says he always sees that guy at international tournaments. Like, and he's working and he's quiet and he doesn't say a lot. Gar Snow, like, he should negotiate all of our contracts because apparently he's got a deal in there, a poison pill that pays him very well if he gets fired or demoted or whatever. But this guy said to me, the guy, everyone's asking about Gar Snow, the guy you should be really feeling for, wondering about, is this guy, because there's this guy, he goes everywhere for the Islanders, he goes quietly, he does his job, and those are the guys you got to wonder about. But I think that in New York, you know, one of the things that they really believed in was they believe very highly in a test, a psychological test that they gave to players who were eligible for the draft. And one of the guys they drafted whose stock went up miles because of that test was Kyle Pozo. And another guy who I think did well on that test, but it doesn't look like it's going to work out, is Michael Del Col. So, like, they put a lot of stock into that, and I think that's one thing that they probably will change. But I think if you're Lamorello, you've got to find work there for a guy like Hunter. You need to bring in somebody like that.
Okay, let's say that they're unsuccessful and John Tavares tests and ends up signing Tampa, St. Louis, San Jose, wherever.
Wherever.
What happens then?
Well, you have choices, right? You got two first-round picks. You've got, 11, 12, or 12, 13?
You got 11, 12.
You got Barzal. I mean, you still have a team, but you're just not as good. Now, the question is, what do you go? Do you go young and start over? And the other thing they're going to have to decide is, do they help Tavares get the eighth year? Does it matter?
So you're saying sign trade.
Can you get something out of it? So, for example, let's just say for argument's sake, the team that Tavares picks has cap problems. Let's say he picks, for argument's sake, because I like making everybody go bananas, Pittsburgh.
Okay.
what can you get out of Pittsburgh to do it?
See, but here's the thing. So I look at it from the player's point of view. Why would I allow myself to go to a team, like be traded to a team that is going to devalue itself to get me?
Well, what? I would look at it this way. If I was John Tavares, I'd believe I'm making them better. And secondly, if I was picking that team, don't create
a hole in the process.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, if you want to sign with them, there's some teams he's going to want to sign with. They're going to have to clear salary. Like, what happens if he decides he wants to go to Dallas?
Mm-hmm. Or Tampa.
It's an even better one.
There's one thing in clearing salary. There's another in sending assets that's huge.
Of course. But if you're the Islanders, you don't care.
That's different than, like, this year, Tampa, and you're going to buy out a defenseman and maybe trade a forward.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you're the Islanders, you're like, hey, how can we facilitate? I don't know. I think the press is on now. They are going after him now to get this done.
Right.
I don't know if it's going to work, but they're really trying.
We will stay tuned to see what happens there. We'll take a pause. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about another new GM that was made official around the NHL. Minnesota, looking your direction next on 31 Thoughts.
The all-new 2018 GMC Terrain is the compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. With features like the Traction Select system to revolutionize how you adapt to the road, a fold flat front passenger seat to give you up to 8 feet of cargo space, and an innovative electronic precision shift system to make shifting easier than ever, the 2018 GMC Terrain is truly mighty like a pro. GMC, we are professional grade.
Elliot, before we get to news that's a couple days old now, that's the Paul Fenton situation as the new general manager in the Minnesota Wild organization. As we record this, David Quinn has just been named the new head coach of the New York Rangers.
Which one do you want to talk about first?
Let's do Quinn.
Okay. This was a guy the Rangers really wanted after they lost out on Jim Montgomery. Like, Jim Montgomery had to make a choice between Dallas and the Rangers. And I think Dallas was like, nope, we're getting this done first. We're aborting our search. We're cutting it short. We're hiring Jim Montgomery. And so he went there. And then I really do believe that David Quinn was the guy the Rangers wanted. And I think they just kept on sweetening it until he couldn't say no. It's the offer he couldn't refuse, Godfather style.
Are you surprised that the Rangers, I mean, this is, you know, heritage team, establishment team, this is the New York Rangers, you know, huge market, go after who's now going to be a first-time NHL coach?
No, I think this was their plan. I think this is something they really wanted to do. I think, like, there were a number of names I heard, you know, Dan Bylsma, maybe wait for Barry Trotz, Bob Hartley, who was in Latvia or something like that, and the one thing I heard from the Rangers all the way through was that, nope, they're going to go new. And, you know, as the Rangers organization has a lot of Boston connections, and I think they really believe that he was one of the possibilities for it.
Anything we can read into this by way of how they will act in free agency? Is there any indication this, you know, if it's Quinn who comes in, Quinn is the new head coach, you know, we know him, of course, from Boston University, working with younger hockey players. Is this the traditional rebuild now for the New York Rangers? I mean, there was some talk a while ago about taking a small step back and then getting frisky in free agency. Do we read anything into the Rangers' strategy for free agency by this hiring?
Well, you know, the one thing is, I think like most other teams, they're going to take a look at Tavares and see if he has interest. But, you know, right now, you know, it's you against, you know, 30 other teams, although some obviously have better chances than others. But I don't know if you can count on that right now. So this says to me that they are prepared to go the long way. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they brought a Rick Nash back at a lower number, if something like that happens, even Grabner back at a similarly low number and go from there. But I think unless, like a Tavares says, yeah, you're my choice, I think they're going to be conservative. They've got to find out if some of these guys can play.
You like the hiring?
I do. I think that it's interesting. Like, the only thing that makes me wonder about it is it's clear that they really had to work him to go. And sometimes, you know, we've talked about this, it's like dating. If somebody really doesn't want to go out with you, at what point do you say, okay, screw it, you're lost?
They don't want to go out with me. Yeah.
Yes. But if you really believe that somebody is the right person, go get them.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that if Jeff Gorton really believes that David Quinn is the right guy for the New York Rangers, then you do what you can to get that guy.
You know, we talked about this last week a little bit. For years and years, the NHL stayed away from college coaches.
Yeah.
Like, really stayed away. And now, whether it's Hakstol, whether it's Montgomery, now it's Quinn, it is very much more a thing in the NHL. Like, it's hard to go, we talked about this too, it's hard to go from junior hockey right to the NHL. Peter DeBoer was able to do that, but that's more the exception than the rule. I think, I mean, there was that whole wave of hiring American Hockey League coaches after Boudreau found success with Washington going back to 2007. Do we start now to see more college coaches getting attention from the National Hockey League and getting jobs right in the NHL as head coach?
You know what I think it says to me, Jeff, is that the league is getting younger. The number one thing a coach has to be able to do now is get guys to play for him.
Right.
And this guy apparently knows how to get people to play for him. And that is huge now. And the league is younger. You know, when you coach in college, you know, Jim Montgomery's teams had some older players. David Quinn's teams tended to have, I think, most a lot of younger players at BC, or BU, excuse me. So I think what that says to me is that at college, you get the swing between the 18-year-olds and the 23-year-olds, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you see both ends of the spectrum. But I think now, like, this is a young league, so the thing to me is, like you're not the first guy. Like, I was on NHL Network last week, and they were like, is New York going to eat David Quinn alive? And I'm like, if the guy can coach and he makes the younger players better, their fans are going to be ecstatic with that. Like, that's what they want, right?
Right.
So if you think that this guy or college coaches are prepared now because they deal with younger players,
mm-hmm.
that's why you're going for it.
Speaking of coaches, this might be a small one, but it's kind of significant, and I've been following this for a while now. Marty Wilford gets an assistant job with the Anaheim Ducks.
Are you going to say that this is, you're thinking that Dallas Eakins is the next guy there because this guy got hired?
No, I'm saying he's done such wonderful work with that blue line with San Diego. I mean, he's really helped Brandon Montour a ton. Now he's an established NHLer. Shea Theodore, he helped a ton. And now younger players like Marcus Pedersen and Andy Walensky, I guess Megna's got a shot at being a seventh guy there. The first rounder Larson's really, you know, coming around. And every time that I would, you know, check in on San Diego or talk to Dallas Eakins, he would point to the work that Marty Wilford's doing. Like, it's a very quiet story, but whenever we talk about Anaheim, I mean, we talk about, you know, this amazing blue line they've always been able to put together. There's another one here at the Memorial Cup here, Josh Mahura playing with the Regina Pats. Sam Steele's a teammate of his. Sam, also an Anaheim pick. But they've done a really good job keeping that blue line robust and populated with real good players. And Marty Wilford's one of those stories of guys that's helped all those players along. I just wanted to get that out on the podcast today because it's been a thing with the Ducks now for a while, how good Marty Wilford's been with that organization. And now he gets the bump up. So,
you know,
good on
Marty
Wilford.
It's interesting.
Good on the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, I don't know very much about him, but a couple of guys told me yesterday that, you know, exactly what you did. Like, a quiet guy who doesn't get a lot of credit for what he's done. First of all, Anaheim let go of their defensive coach, Trent Yanni, so it's a seamless fit, really. But the second thing is, like, I'm curious about it because they also announced yesterday that they were extending Dallas Eakins, who's their American Hockey League coach.
Yep.
And, you know, you got to wonder, with one of his top assistants going up to the NHL level, if that means it's another reason why, when the time comes for Randy Carlyle, if that is going to be Dallas Eakins as the heir apparent there.
Could be. I still think he's an NHL coach.
Yeah.
I think he probably learned a lot of lessons in going through the grinder that was Edmonton. And I think coming out of what happened post-Dallas Eakins, I think a lot of people, if they have a real sober look at what happened, they say to themselves, you know what? Maybe the problem there wasn't the coach.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that's legit. Because they removed Eakins and the problems remained. Okay, let's get to Minnesota. Paul Fenton, officially named general manager, and interestingly enough, one of the first things out of his mouth is...
You know, I've run Milwaukee for pretty much 20 years. Had a hand in there even when I was the director of player personnel. I believe that your minor league team has to be your vaulting stone to get to the next level. When we made the Stanley Cup Finals 2 years ago, I think we had 17 drafted players that had come from Milwaukee. That's a great feather in our cap for our staff, for the development people, for our coaches that are there. The last six coaches that we hired in Milwaukee made their way to the NHL or had come from the NHL and have become successful. And so it's getting the right people in place. I want to evaluate everything that we have here before anything is determined. But that's the biggest part, is to draft and develop, put the right plan in place, and then go forward.
Can understand why, coming from Nashville, that Milwaukee team was always stacked, always competitive, did a really good job having that battery between Milwaukee and Nashville. So the model remains the same as far as Paul Fenton is concerned with Minnesota and Iowa.
I cringed a couple of times watching that media conference. And, hey, people get fired, you get hired. There's certain things you accept when you do this job, right? Like, Jeff, you and I know that working in our job, we are going to get it on social media from time to time. You know the job going in, okay? I found that media conference cringeworthy because I thought it was like people went out of their way to take shots at the way business used to be done there.
Are you referring to Craig Leopold talking about how...
The difference between, you know, Vegas and Nashville when Craig came in, the rules changed quite a bit, and it's really interesting. I'm going to be curious to see how they even change it more when Seattle comes in here in a couple of years. You know,
I'll see be involved everything. In that if yeah. I can. Trust me, it won't happen again.
There were a couple things like that. Like, he's the boss, and you know, like, I'm not a fan of people saying things like, "Well, next time I'll pay more attention." Like, if you're the owner, the buck stops with you. If I'm the top of the pyramid, you don't get to blame other people. You're the top of the pyramid. You're the guy. And that makes it sound like, you know, he didn't have a lot of say over things that happened in Minnesota. That's not true. He had a very big say over things that happened in Minnesota.
Does that include the expansion draft for Vegas? That's one of the things that he referenced about saying it won't happen
again.
I
don't know if he per se made the decision. I would think Fletcher ultimately did. But one of the stories I heard when Mike Yeo was fired as coach, I think Fletcher really knew it was time and he was really grappling with it. But one of the stories I heard was the last game they lost was a weekend afternoon, I think. Or whatever it was, because the broadcast or something showed, there was a shot, whether it was a reporter on Twitter or the broadcast or wherever it was, showed Chuck Fletcher sitting in the stands or his box for right. a long time after that game was over. And you knew what it meant. And I asked somebody about that later, and they told me that he was talking with Craig Leopold, and Craig Leopold walked out of that suite and said, "Chuck, you know what you got to do." And I asked Chuck if that story was true, and he wouldn't tell me. He said, "I'm not talking about that." But I believe it was true. And you can't tell me that he didn't have a significant say over the things the organization did. Anyway, if I ever get hired to a job, and I'm never going to be an NHL general manager, I think it's enough of a celebration I get the chance that you don't need to dump all over the guy who was previously there.
Right.
Because he was there for 9 years, so you must have thought that he did some good things. Anyway, it's going to be interesting because, you know, Fenton has a team that's in the dreaded middle.
Yep.
What do you do? The owner has said, "We're not going backwards." How are you making them better?
I understand the frustration of get to the playoffs and get bounced, get to the playoffs and get bounced, and can't get over that line.
Mm-hmm.
honestly, I don't know if they have the roster to push the ball over.
Like, I think the thing you're worried about is...
What more can you get out of that roster that's not getting any younger?
Well, that's the thing. Like, your best players are older. You know, even Dubnyk is getting older. He's their best player. You know, Suter is still really good. He's coming off a big-time injury, and he's older. Parise, I thought, before he got hurt in the playoffs, I thought Parise was really good. He was coming on. He was playing his best hockey he had in a while. But his body is breaking down. Mikko Koivu's older. Their best skater last year was Eric Staal, who's, you know, 35 years old and another year away from unrestricted free agency. I'll tell you this. I think teams would love to trade for him.
Eric Staal.
A center with 1 year left coming off that year. Yeah. I think they could get a lot for him. And I think the other thing they're starting to worry about is, you know, Granlund's a good player, but can he carry a team? Like Dumba, I was really impressed with Dumba in the playoffs.
Dumba had a really good season.
I think the Wild are starting to worry that Granlund, who's a good player, but Niederreiter and Coyle and Brodin, those three guys might not be as good as they hoped.
See, to me, Coyle's the big one. Coyle's a huge one, because if that works out, or if that had have worked out the way they hoped, everything's different in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Everything is completely different.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Jared Spurgeon.
Me too. Actually, and that guy competes.
I'll take him on my team anywhere I go. I'm a fan of Jason Zucker. He plays on my team any day of the week as well. But I just don't know that you have enough there to push it over. I don't know what the answer is. Like, seriously, I don't. Like, you have your married to long-term deals with Parise and Suter.
Yeah.
Got Granlund for two more years. You got Mikko Koivu for two more years at $5.5 a copy. Jeez, man, they're in such a tough spot, and all they're doing at this point now with those guys is getting 1 year older.
Well, you know, I think Fenton's really smart, but I think this is going to test his creativity. Like, how can you do that? Like, I look at their division. Nashville is really good.
Oh, it's killer division.
And they are still in the middle of their window. Winnipeg is really good, and their window is just opening. You know, Colorado made the playoffs last year. Now, they'll be interesting because Joe Sakic has said they might get even younger. So I think it raises the possibility, is there any chance they take a bit of a step back? But they made the playoffs.
Right.
You know, Chicago is not going to tolerate being that bad again. They're going to try something.
How big? We heard rumors of that coming around trade deadline time.
Well, you know, I think they'll make a run at Tavares, too. Like, I do. I think they'll ask. I think they'll say, is there any way we can get him here?
Isn't it more the issue with Chicago, the blue line, and getting the goalie back?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, but this is a game-changing player.
That'll be curious. Want to get a couple more things in quick before we get to some... by the way, Robert Thomas of the Hamilton Bulldogs, speaking of St. Louis. St. Louis Blues draft pick is going to be joining the program here in a couple of seconds. Want to get to Evander Kane, which we've pushed off way too late in the podcast. 7 years times $7 million.
Hat tip to Irv Gafar.
Yeah, man.
Who
breaking
broke
it.
This baby.
Yeah, huh? Attaboy, Irv.
Thanks a lot, Irv. Makes me less valuable.
Thoughts on Kane re-signing with the San Jose Sharks. Does it at all impact a hunt for John Tavares?
You know, they had $20 million under the cap, right?
Yep.
I think the most interesting thing is Logan Couture is a year away from an extension.
So is Joe Pavelski.
Yeah, but Pavelski, I think, that'll be an interesting one because he's 34 next summer, right? So you're probably not looking as big a deal as you are for a guy like Couture. Their biggest contracts right now are Burns and Vlasic at 8x8. Like, you got to think Couture is going there too, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you can handle it. But then again, you can worry about that in a year. I'm sure they're still going to pitch.
You surprised he stayed?
No, Kane? Not when I heard what the contract was.
You think it's too much for someone who's, I mean, this isn't a 50-point guy.
I think what happens is there's so few free agents now.
Yeah.
Who gets to the market anymore? Like, Tavares is so rare. And I think the most interesting thing for me about is that Doug Wilson, he doesn't like July 1st.
Right.
If you look at the biggest contracts he's given, they're to his own guys. Marlow, Thornton, Burns, Vlasic, Jones. If he's going to pay, it's someone he knows. It's probably the biggest gamble of Wilson's career, but I think that's why he made the deal. He wanted to take a look.
He looked good in San Jose this year after
he
the
did.
Trade.
He did.
Really did. He looked fantastic.
He did.
What does it mean for Joe Thornton? Or should I say Joe Thornton's money?
I think Joe Thornton made it very clear that, you know, he knew that he would have to be willing to bend a little bit. Look, if Joe Thornton thinks that team is the best place he could win the Stanley Cup and he's comfortable there, yeah. I'm sure he'll make it work.
I can't see him anywhere else, to be honest with you. I know that there was some talk about Toronto.
Well, I we've talked about this on the podcast before. I think it had everything to do with the injury.
Right.
You know, he's comfortable there. He knows how to handle his injury. The doctors know him. He knows all the doctors there. He knows the setup. He knows the rehab. Like, I'll tell you this. I believe that if I was San Jose and I could have Joe Thornton back, I'd be trying to do it. I'd yep. be talking about different ways to do it, but I would want him there. I still think he's a hell of a player. I'd still find room for him. You know, Meyer and Hurdle, I thought were really good for them in the playoffs.
Yep.
But they haven't done it yet long term.
It's a couple of guys you're looking for pops from. Like, it's not just, you know, Timo Meyer, Carlson, Donskoy.
But I think those guys fill good roles there. Like, Bob Murray said to me that he really felt that one of the differences between Anaheim and San Jose was Melker Carlson and Marcus Sorensen. Mm-hmm. So they had guys that could play on their fourth line and we couldn't. So I see those guys as fitting a role. You know, Donskoy's not a big game, but I like the way he played. I thought he played really well for them in the playoffs.
Yeah. And you know what? To the Kane question from earlier on, too, he goes, like, the San Jose environment is one with a real strong leadership group, whether it's Pavelski, whether it's Thornton, whether it's Logan Couture.
I like their coach,
and
too.
He's,
I like
Pete DeBoer, certainly. Yeah, so do I. He's never really had that in his career, has he? Is this the first, I know it's a relatively, you know, small audit, but Evander Kane's never really had that type of structure around him.
Well, I think the one thing is that if you take a look at Winnipeg, you know, he had some guys that turned out to be really good. He had Wheeler.
Yep.
He had Byfuglien. You know, and Byfuglien was one of the guys he didn't get along with. You know, Buffalo, it's obvious now by what happened at the end of the season that they really think that their culture has to change. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a big believer in that it's up to you, Jeff. Like, we could have the worst culture at Rogers. It doesn't mean that you or me or Emil, who's sitting here watching me consistently screw up the microphone, it doesn't mean that we will take shortcuts. Like, we still police ourselves regardless of what other people do around us.
Agree 100%.
And, you know,
100%.
You know, I just think, like, the thing with Kane is that it's almost unfair in a lot of ways because you don't know what the truth is. We're not in the room. We don't know what the truth is. We don't know what the truth isn't. But he's set up to succeed now. He's going to have a lot of money in the bank. He's got a long-term contract. He's on a mature team with, I think, a great coaching staff. I think that is a great organization. There's no excuses anymore. And the way we saw him play last year, I don't think there is any reason he can't be like that if he wants to.
Great point. We'll stand by to see what happens with the San Jose Sharks. But yeah, Irv Gafar, props to you, man, for breaking the news. It is a 7-year extension for Evander Kane with the Sharks, $7 million per. Take a pause. Speaking of winning, someone that's done it at every level that he's played at is Robert Thomas of the Hamilton Bulldogs, a St. Louis Blues first rounder. Joins us next on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Tired of subscribing to multiple streaming services to get your sports fix? Introducing Sportsnet Now. Live stream the entire Stanley Cup playoffs, the Blue Jays, Raptors, and NBA, Premier League, MasterCard, Memorial Cup, and much, much more, all in one subscription. You can stream on the go or at home on your big screen from the most popular devices, including smartphones, tablets, Apple TV, Xbox, and Chromecast. Sign up for as long as you want and cancel whenever you'd like. Get the best bang for your buck with the sports streaming subscription that gets you the most content. Visit snnow.ca for more details.
St. Louis Blues are proud to select from the OHL London Knights, Robert Thomas.
Raw Bob Thomas, Aurora, Ontario, born and raised, London Knights with that organization, won a Memorial Cup 1 year ago. Now we got a one-on-one with Thomas looking behind him. Thomas trying to go coast to coast. He goes in and out. Oh, baby! What a goal! Highlight real goal by Thomas.
Nice bench wanted one, but here comes Thomas back to the trailer. Mete for Thomas scores! Tic-tac-toe, and it's 4-1.
Puck movement by the
Jones. Jones cross ice. Thomas and Luchak hustles back. Thomas going to seal the deal for the London Knights with 1 minute left.
Thomas getting the pass back. Stopping short of a check. Nice little dance move there to come through the zone. And what a goal by Thomas, who has had one heck of a game and now gets rewarded with a goal.
That one is for the highlight reel to be sure. Robert Thomas with the second goal of the hockey game, and it's an absolute beauty. Streaks in, goes red line to red line, beats the defender as Riley Damiani, maybe addresses him is more accurate, and beats Richardson, making it 3-0 now London.
The biggest smile so far at the MasterCard Memorial Cup this year is from Robert Thomas, and it occurred last night when he scored a goal against a very tough Acadie Bathurst team, because the night previous, he was stopped 8 times by Stuart Skinner. Who was happier when you scored last night, Robert? Was it you or was it your coach, John Gruden?
I think it was definitely me. It was a good relief, for sure.
What was it like, though, that 8 shots against Skinner? Like, you ever seen anything like that?
You know what? You know, you got to give him a lot of credit. He played a hell of a game, and I definitely couldn't get one past him.
We're with Robert Thomas, St. Louis Blues first-round draft pick, member of the Hamilton Bulldogs, currently competing here in Regina for the MasterCard Memorial Cup. Elliot.
So, Rob, last year in Chicago, the draft is there. The pick 17 comes, and it is the general manager of the London Knights, also representing the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think there was a building full of people who thought that Rob Thomas was going to Toronto. Did you think that?
I didn't think for sure. I had it in the back of my mind that it was definitely a chance, but I wouldn't say so for sure. I honestly had no idea where I was going to go at that point, so I was just sort of sitting there hoping to hear my name, but I knew it was potentially a possibility, but I didn't know for sure.
You must have met with a lot of teams, because you're one of those guys in the draft last year that no one, like, everyone knew you were going in the first round. We just didn't know where. Mm-hmm. So you must have met with, like, did you meet with all 31 teams?
Yeah, I met with all but 2 teams, the combine, and I'd met with those 2 teams the week before.
Anything about the St. Louis interview that gave you reason to believe, yeah, I could be nudging there?
I'd say there's a couple things. I'd met with one of their guys a couple weeks before, mm-hmm. One of like their sports psychologists, and I knew that one went, that interview went really well, and we connected really well, and then their combine interview was funny. It was my first one, actually.
St. Louis was?
Yeah, it was my first one, and I still remember walking in. Everyone's always nervous for their first one.
Yeah.
And there was probably 15, 20 guys gathered around the table. And right in the middle, there's just a camera set up right pointing at me. So
not intimidating at all.
So that one, honestly, I did pretty well there, but I wasn't expecting to.
Well, you know, somebody told me that St. Louis is also a tough team, too, because you walk in there and you've got Al MacInnis and you've got Martin Brodeur and you've got Keith Tkachuk if he's there. You know, Dave Taylor played in the NHL for 20 years. Like, you walk in there and there's all these guys that are not only good executives, but they were great players. And I've heard players and agents tell me that that's very intimidating sometimes for those kids.
I think for me, I sort of just walked in and, like, and I just, like, opened my eyes and I was in shock. I was like, holy crap, I'm meeting all these.
all these famers.
Yeah, exactly. And I just thought it was pretty cool to all these guys are coming back and working for the teams that they played for, and I think that's one thing I love about St. Louis is, even when I was there, all like their player development guys, a lot of guys around there, they all played in St. Louis and they all mm-hmm. played pro, so, that experience they can give us is definitely huge.
Now, was there a team that you said, oh yeah, this team, they want me? Like, you thought that after your interview that this team was interesting?
I'd say there might have been a couple. I think St. Louis for sure. That was one of the ones that I had a good feeling about coming out of that interview. I'd say there's a couple other ones, but I don't think they were really in the right range for me. Mm. I think they were picking too high in the draft, so I was optimistic, but I thought I really knocked a couple of those interviews out.
How close do you think you are to playing in the NHL? I mean, we've been talking about, you know, the pro polisher of Robert Thomas, like, hey, you know, Dale Hunter's, you know, not a dummy. Like, when it was time to start trading players, you trade the ones that aren't going to be coming back, and you're one of the, you know, around the top of that list, Cliff Huynh and Max Jones, etc. But how close do you feel to playing pro?
I feel like I'm pretty close. I think one big thing for me this year is I thought I had a really good camp, and I thought I really proved myself and gave myself an opportunity at the start of the year. And I think the one thing for me was I needed to become more well-rounded. I thought my two-way game was really good. I think I needed to improve my offensive game a little bit and a little bit of around in the D zone.
How do you work on that? Like, I know, like, one of your teammates, Brandon Sagan, uses Jeremy Williams as like a shooting instructor. Like, do you have a shooting instructor as well? Like, how do you work on offense? I'm curious about that.
I just liked watching stuff. I liked watching a lot of video. That's what I spent most of the summer on doing was I just watched things, and I was fortunate enough to work out with Gary Roberts, and they got a ton of great players that I was able to just watch and learn from during the summer, like McDavid, Scheifele, the list goes on, and just being able to be around those guys and watch them and watch the little things they do in summer hockey skates and stuff like that, it just, I think for me, it just, I learned a lot from that.
So just give me an example. Like, what did you see? Give me one thing from McDavid and one thing from Scheifele that you saw, you said, I'm stealing that.
I think one of the big things was, for me, I like having the puck below the goal line and stuff, and obviously McDavid's the best at those tight turns. So for me, I remember still the first time I tried defending him in one of those skates, he just absolutely blew me away. And little stuff like when he turns and how he turns, I think those are the couple of things that I'd take away.
Nice.
Who are your favorite players growing up? Who are your guys?
I really like Jonathan Toews. Ever since that one shootout for Canada, because my family was big on watching that sort of stuff. So from then on, he was my go-to.
How old were you? Like, what was it when you were playing in St. Andrews College, YSC? What was it like when scouts started coming around and asking your coach if they can talk to you after the game? Do you remember how old you were when that started happening?
I'd say probably it was in minor midget. It was the first time. It wasn't really
so York Simcoe Express?
Yeah, York Simcoe Express minor midget. I think it started right for the first tournament. There was a bunch of that, and they did a lot of phone calls in my year, so it was mostly just phone calls after games.
So they would they approach you? Would they talk to your dad? Like, how would it work?
We always fill out this little questionnaire, and you give your phone number, and they just always just directly call you.
Right. Mm-hmm. What was conversations like for you? Was it weird at first?
Yeah, it was definitely a little bit weird, but once you get going, they all sort of wear all the same questions, so you kind of just get on a roll with it.
Indulge me here, Elliot, for one second, because
indulge me, this is going to be tough, Rob, I'll tell you that.
When I say indulge me, listeners are just hearing bore me. St. Andrews College is fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. Once upon a time, you know, the only hockey story coming out of SAC was Greg Hotham. Mm-hmm. Like, he was the one guy from St. Andrews College that made it to the NHL. You know, there's you now, Warren Fogle, two players last year, Ryan O'Connell, Morgan Barron get drafted right from St. Andrews College. What was that experience like for you? And how has St. Andrews College, you know, this school in Aurora, become almost like this hothouse for elite level hockey players?
I think the biggest thing for me was they obviously having that rink there really helps their hockey program. And especially with YSC playing out of that rink, it helps out a lot. And my biggest takeaway from that is it wasn't really about hockey. It was about being a better person. And that's one big thing that they teach there. And their motto is becoming a complete man. And I think that really, really helped me out a lot. And besides the hockey factor, just like the schooling and stuff's unbelievable. And like I said, the biggest point was the becoming a complete man.
Yeah, so I talked to someone the other day about St. Andrews College, and he said, what they do with the kids, they take them out of their comfort zone and get them, whether it's, you know, public speaking, whether it's theater, like, if you're growing up and you're a hockey player, lacrosse player, and all of a sudden, you know, go do theater, Robert.
Yeah.
Is that kind of along the vibe of what you're talking about, like taking you out of that comfort zone and you know, putting you in situations where I'm not so sure about this, but I got to do it.
You hit it right on there. For me, I wasn't very good at public speaking, and I got really nervous in front of people. And by the end of that, I was fine with it. And I was able to do a lot of interviews and stuff like that. And It really started for me right from there.
Well, you know, you sound pretty good here. I got to tell you, you sound better than my host.
Yeah.
It's funny because I had a buddy of mine. He's a lawyer, and he hated public speaking. So he took drama classes after he got out of law school. And he said it made a huge impact for him in a courtroom, that he felt much more confident. You know, as you know, Robert, you know, playing in London, you're going to be in the NHL. Like this whole thing about having getting all these cameras shoved in your face and doing all these interviews, if you're not at least comfortable doing them, they can eat you alive.
My first couple interviews, I remember I was just sitting there starstruck, just staring at that camera and didn't really say too much. So for me, I did those drama classes and I think that helped me out a lot.
Now, what's your favorite subject in school?
I'm going to go off the board a bit. My favorite was math. I was a big math guy.
Well, you got to figure out goals and assists, right? So it's totally understandable. Yes. Now, what was the subject you always tried to skip? Like, I've got a hangnail. I can't go to class today.
I was the worst at English, so that one was definitely it.
Well, I can do that. I can, you know, I went to Western. I can tie that in. I'm an English major, and I'm still shy of my degree. I've got to take a Shakespearean English, which is 4 essays and 2 exams. And I'm like, there is not a chance I'm doing this at 47 years old. So I can empathize.
That's hilarious. Who picks the music for the Hamilton Bulldogs?
We got a little bit of a battle going on right now between Connor Walters and Nick Camano.
Oh, yeah. Who's responsible? Because every time I walk by you guys warming up, all I hear is the middle. Who's responsible for that?
That'd be Wally for sure.
All right.
Yeah.
You want to change that?
No, I love it.
Gonna keep it?
Yeah, of course.
Speaking of goofiness in junior hockey, there are a few things that I've seen that are more entertaining. In Red Deer from Memorial Cup a couple of years ago, you guys would just destroy me and Colby and Todd, Armstrong and Warner. You know where I'm going with the Doug Stacey jump circle.
Yeah.
Elliot, do you know what I'm talking about?
No, go ahead.
Robert, describe the Doug Stacey jump. Is it jump up circle?
Yeah.
The jump up circle.
So in Red Deer there, Doug Stacey is our trainer in London. Every warm up, we always go in a circle. And throughout the year, it usually consists mostly of the rookies. They always go in and you got to perform something funny to sort of loosen up the guys, or whether it's a crappy dance or...
Max Jones was the best, by the way.
Yeah, him and Brandon Crawley went at it. Yeah. And like whether it's like an inside joke or chirping at some of the guys, someone's got to go in the middle and do something. And throughout the year, you sort of figure out who's the better dancers. Maybe not better dancers, but funnier dancers. So in Red Deer there, it was Crawley and Jonesy.
Yeah.
And those guys were consistently, they'd always come in and save it with their dancing. And
they're awesome.
Yeah, so in the finals there, we decided to have a little dance-off where those two guys went at it, and it was pretty funny to watch.
I just wish we would have taped it for each. Honestly, this would have been like social media hit number one.
It sounds like Chris Farley and Patrick Swayze on Saturday Night Live, the Chippendale dance-off. Which one of the two of them is going to make it? Now, did you get anything for winning this?
No, not really. It was just
sort of the pride of victory.
Yeah, exactly.
Just the prestige. You know, that was this is now your second Memorial Cup.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a handful of people that have ever won it, you know, twice with two different teams. You're poised to do that. You won it with the London Knights in Red Deer. What was that initial experience like for you? Now, I mean, you're the vet, you know, the star on the Hamilton Bulldogs on your way to the NHL. But you weren't that guy then. That was Mitch Marner and Dvorak and Tkachuk. Like, that was their team. Yo Levy, that was their team. What was that experience like for you? I know you still, I think, live with Tkachuk in the off season, or he still stays at your house?
Yeah, he's been around. He's got a place just around the corner this year, so it's nice. But for me, that experience was huge. That whole year, I stood there and just watched and watched everything I could and took a lot of things. And, you know, Devo, Marnes, and Chucky, they were huge for me. I still stay in touch with them all, and the influence that they had on me was huge, and I can never thank them enough. And just to be able to learn from guys like that, such good role models, and obviously great players, but great people off the ice as well.
All right. Elliot, we're going to see how good of a stick handler Robert Thomas is on this next question.
Okay.
Was the Memorial Cup winning goal that year tipped, or did it go in clean?
You know what? That's still up for debate. I'm going to leave that one for – you're going to have to ask Devo or Chucky about that one. But
Dvorak, they still go back and forth on it, on whether it was tipped or not?
Yeah. I know who tipped it. But
so that answers the question.
Yeah, there it is.
Now, that's awesome.
Wait, do you, how much? I totally forgot about that. How much do you think Keith Tkachuk had to do with the Blues drafting you?
I think he has a lot of pull in the Blues organization. Obviously, he's an unbelievable hockey player, and he's really a household name there in St. Louis. So I think he's got a big say in a lot of things. I don't know if he had a lot of say in them drafting me, but I know he's well-respected.
And now, you are a guy on a team with a lot of talented young players. Mm-hmm. When you played Kyrou in the OHL this year, how much of it was, I'm sizing this guy up?
You know what? We're good buddies, and we love to compete against each other. And I wish we actually met a lot more. I think we only played, maybe even only one game against each other this year. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely a little bit of a battle. I think we were both going after each other a bit, and I don't think either of us got any points that game, but it was good. I wish I got to play against some more.
In your draft year, how much would you read rankings, look at prospect lists, keep your eyes on, okay, this guy's got me here, that guy's got me there? Would you follow that, or would you tune it out?
I think you'd be lying if you said you'd tune it out. Every time a new ranking came out...
Someone put it up in the room?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You'd come into your stall and someone have the number taped on your stall, or it'd be on the whiteboard or something. Or you'd be sitting there getting dressed and someone would yell out, hey, Robbie, 21, or something like that. So,
or you're sliding, yeah. This month. You got to pick up your game.
Exactly.
Down 25 in this ranking.
Yeah, so you definitely hear a lot about it, but you got to try and block it out as much as you can, but... mostly your teammates aren't going to help with that.
All right, so you got a big summer ahead of you because there's no question you want to make the Blues, give them a tough decision. Mm-hmm. How much time will you take off after the Memorial Cup? And then once you start going, what are you going to work on? What's the one thing you're going to say, I got to be better at this to take the jump?
Obviously, you have to take a little bit of time off. It's been such a long season with starting in St. Louis and then coming back to London and the World Juniors and stuff like that. So I got to take a little bit of time off. But I think the biggest thing is, for me, would be I need to work on my first three steps and acceleration. The game's so fast at that level, and just having that little bit of a jump right off the bat would be huge and help out a lot. Obviously, strength's going to come a long way. You're playing against men, not teenagers and young adults. So it'll be those two things that I'll be working on.
Are you... superstitious? Have any rituals? I mean, everyone has, you know, habits, and at what point they become ritualistic, I guess that's a matter of interpretation. It's all personal. But the things that you need to have a very specific way all the time?
I wouldn't say I'm really superstitious or have little rituals. I kind of mix it up all the time. The one thing I do is in the playoffs, every time we win, I always wear the same suit to the game. And then if we lose, I'll change it up. That'd be the only thing.
Well, you've probably worn that same suit a lot. So I don't think you guys lost back-to-back games in the entire playoffs, right? Like, you don't think you lost back-to-back games once.
No.
That's a whole lot of the same suit.
I know.
That's going to be quite a dry cleaning bill after the season.
Yeah.
You might want to throw that one out.
Yeah. You might just want to burn that one. I want to ask you the difference between, he's been coached by a couple of heavyweights, Dale Hunter and John Gruden. The difference between the two, from your point of view, are they more similar than dissimilar, or are they more... Like, how would you describe the difference in their coaching styles?
I'd say they're pretty similar. I'd say the only thing that really separates them is Gruden likes to communicate a little bit more with the players.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of both, really. I obviously wouldn't be in the situation I am with Dale, and can't thank him enough for all the things he's done for me. And he's honestly been one of the best coaches I've ever had. And I'm sure a lot of guys can say that. Obviously,
turned a lot of kids pro.
Yeah, he has, And then with Grudes, it's obviously tough when you get dealt from a place where you've been for over 2 years, and for him to be able to sort of cooperate with me and always be supportive, and now look where we are. So I'm a big fan of both of them.
You know, one of the things, Elliot, that I don't think gets talked about enough when kids get, you know, traded in the CHL,
mm-hmm.
you know, to your point, like you leave the team, and there's your buddies, and, you know, the situation with London, Dale was letting go of a lot of players and building for the future.
Mm-hmm.
But what never gets considered, other than from the player's point of view, is leaving a Billet family.
Mm-hmm.
Is that one of the toughest things, or is that the toughest thing for you guys?
I think for me, that was definitely the toughest thing. I had a really special relationship with my billets, Kevin, Angela, and my billet brother, Owen. They'd come to everything with me, the draft, and everything before that. And it's something that's really special, and it's something that makes junior hockey so special is being able to have a billet family like that. And I'll always stay in touch with them, and I've been lucky enough that they've came down to a bunch of the Hamilton playoff games, and
nice.
They were on the ice when we won it, and stuff like that, which is pretty special. And even my new billets in Hamilton, the Sordos, they've been unbelievable, and they've really helped me out a lot.
At the end of this tournament, what do you want people to say about Robert Thomas?
I think the one biggest thing is I just want to be a winner. For me, that's everything. I love to compete. I love to win, and I just want to come out on top.
Stephen McCauley, by the way, the last player to win two Memorial Cups with two different teams, St. John and Halifax in 2012-2013. So, Robert, best of luck the rest of the way with the Bulldogs. Have a wonderful summer, and we'll see you in a St. Louis Blues uniform next year. Awesome. Hope I didn't jinx that. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
All right, Elliot, let's finish up the podcast as we normally do with some Ask 31s, starting with AM. What are the lessons that other NHL teams have learned from the Vegas Golden Knights, and how do they affect their moves in the summer? Is there a lesson to be learned here?
You know, Brendan Shanahan was on our flagship primetime on the Fan 5-9 the other day, and Bob McCowan asked him that. And he gave an interesting answer. He said that
it's really impressive what they've done, and I think that, to me, is the biggest takeaway is that they all just decided that, you know what, we're all going to be very coachable. We're all going to do exactly what our game plan is. No one's going to take their foot off the pedal in any way. I mean, I see players on their team right now that are back-checking through the neutral zone that I've never seen back-check like that ever before. And
they work hard.
There is a buy-in that they have right now that is, you know, incredibly impressive. And so it's the buy-in. It's the buy-in and sort of the togetherness. And we call ourselves a great team sport, and they're doing it better than anybody I've seen right now.
And I think that's a good point. The other thing, too, I really believe, Jeff, is I think it's going to force teams to ask themselves a lot of questions. Is there anybody we're really undervaluing here? Who are the guys in our organization that we might really be missing out on? And why? Like, I'm sure in Columbus, they're saying, why were we so off on Carlson? Mm-hmm. In Minnesota, they're asking. In Florida, as I said many times, I think that was a salary dump, no matter what old Dale Tallon quotes get trotted out there. That was a salary dump. But I'm sure in Minnesota and Columbus, they're asking those questions. So I think that, too. I think the other thing is, and nobody really talks about this a lot, is that I think the battle over no-move clauses leading into the 2020 expansion draft for Seattle is going to be fierce. Because why did those teams...
Namely, don't give them?
Yeah, why did those teams force their way into these situations? Because of no-move clauses.
Do you think that'll become a CBA piece of horse bartering?
I'm sure it always could be. Like it has been in the past, like nobody's eligible for them until they are eligible for unrestricted free agency, right? But I believe everything is a CBA issue potentially. So, yes, I could see it being the case.
See, I see one of the lessons, and listen, everything's come together. You know, of course, there's a few missteps, you know, thrown in. But, I mean, everything's really come together almost perfectly for the Vegas Golden Knights this year. You know, healthy. I mean, I know they had the goaltending injury carousel to start the year. But I think right coach with the right group of players, to Brendan Shanahan's point, with the right motivation. But isn't one of the lessons here for Vegas, when you have a chance to improve with skill, you do it. Doesn't matter what the position is. And sometimes having a coach that just lets the players play can be a really great thing.
Yes.
Like I hope, honestly, I really hope that Vegas is able to get this thing over the finish line. I really hope, because hearing how Gerard Gallant handles these players, watching how the Vegas Golden Knights play, they don't sit on leads. They don't protect leads. Their idea is keep the puck as far away from our net as possible. It's not dive in front of pucks as the puck stays in our zone as we try to sit on a one- or two-goal lead. Like, you love the way they play. I love the way Gerard Gallant handles his players. told stories about Gerard Gallant on this podcast and how he handles guys. Heard some more here from ex-players of his in Montreal, and it's all similar to what other people have told me about him. I think one of the lessons is let players play.
Yes, and Jeff, don't you think they're the favorite?
I've stopped betting against them.
Yes, I think they're the favorite.
As one, it's funny. I was texting with someone the other day, and I said, "Man, I keep betting against Vegas, and they keep on winning. What happened to the rule that, you know, the house always wins?" And this person texted me back and said, "Well, what if the Vegas Golden Knights are the house?" It looks very much like they are. Like, I've given up betting against them, and for the story that it brings, I want Vegas to win this thing.
You know,
I want Vegas to win the whole thing.
You know, now what do you think of all, like, and I hear a lot of it in Canada, the jealousy. They shouldn't be allowed to win this.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
I agree with you.
That's ridiculous.
If they win it, like, there is not, like, everybody talking about all these expansion rules overly favored them. There is not a single person who looked at that roster last June and said, that roster is going to win a Stanley Cup. Nobody said that.
Elliot, I thought they were getting Rasmus Dahlin. I thought they were in the lottery. I looked at the lineup and I said, oof, not a chance. No way. Who's going to score goals? Who's going to defend? Poor Marc-Andre Fleury. He's going to feel like he's playing paintball. Getting shot at all game long.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I think they're the favorites. You know, here's another one for you. So I was at Canada's Wonderland the other day. And for those of you who don't know what Canada's Wonderland is, it's an amusement park just north of Toronto. My kid loves it. Get there early. Just advice. Big lines. And I ran to somebody I knew there, and he told me that he went before the year and he put $100 on Vegas. So his ticket is worth $50,000,
whoa,
he's told me, if they win.
Oh,
now, did you
wow.
hear what's happening? Vegas is now offering to buy back some of these tickets. Like, for example, if you're in line to win $50,000, they'll yeah. pay you $10,000 now.
What would you do?
Oh, man, I'm going for it.
Oh, so am I.
I'm going
just
for
100
it.
Bucks.
Yeah. But you'd know you'd have $10,000 in your pocket as opposed to $50,000.
Guaranteed, yeah.
Now, Emil Big Shooter here says you got to offer him $45,000 for him to give up the $50,000. But I'm keeping the ticket, and I'm going for it.
It's such a great story.
Yeah, they're my
single
favorite.
Level. Yeah, one player specifically you'd be happiest for?
Fleury.
Vegas wins. Is your Conn Smythe?
Oh, yeah. I mean, who else is it?
No, I mean, it seems... Okay, if
you
Vegas
know what I really
loses,
like? I really like Nate Schmidt. I'd be happy for Nate Schmidt.
Thrill for Nate Schmidt.
I mean, all of them, really, but...
If Vegas loses, is Fleury still your Conn Smythe?
It depends on how well he plays.
Hextall, 87.
Jaguar, 2003.
Jaguar as well.
Like,
yep.
It depends on how well he plays, right?
From... Jacob Travis, have the Senators made a decision on whether they're keeping their fourth overall pick? Yeah, they said they're keeping it.
I think you can expect them to keep it. You know, the one thing that I kind of wondered about Jacob is there's some point where they're going to go up to the Avalanche and say, can we offer you anything to take this away?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they could do that. There's nothing stopping Pierre Dorion from going up to the Colorado Avalanche and saying, what can we trade you to eliminate that stipulation?
Because it's a gamble for Colorado too, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a gamble on both sides. Although Colorado's
yeah,
not deciding
what it is.
Yeah, but
if I would say Colorado, I'd say, what are we talking about here?
Mm-hmm.
You can always listen. You don't have to say yes.
And the gamble is Jack Hughes, who will be the first overall pick next year. I think if I'm Colorado, I just sit tight. And I look at the Ottawa Senators and I say, this is probably going to be another year of pain. They talked about it before. I don't know. It's lottery.
I would listen.
You have to listen. I just don't know. I just don't know what you could do to get me out of potentially, you know, being in the pool for Jack Hughes.
Yeah. I'd wait to see their first 10 games next year.
Sure.
0-10? Sorry.
Yeah, no deal.
9-1? Okay, we'll think about it.
Oh, here's an interesting one on Vegas. Shawnee Hill. Since it's a copycat league, will we see an infusion of money into game presentation / entertainment departments given the show Vegas is putting on? I hope so.
You know, Shawnee, I agree with you, but I think that started last year in Nashville.
Yeah.
Like, I will tell you something, Jeff, that so I've done now, I think, 18 Stanley Cups, something like that, 18 cups. Last year was the first time I had multiple people texting me saying, if I get down there, can you get me tickets? Nashville.
Nashville. Oh, it's a hot one.
It was a hot one.
Yeah.
And I'm having it again this year. If I can get to Vegas, can you get me tickets? And what I think Nashville did last year was it showed that you should not be afraid to take your local city's identity and make it the Stanley Cup's identity.
Yeah.
And people said they don't like that Vegas stuff. Oh, I love it. I love Vegas. I can't get enough Vegas. My wife and I, we used to go to Vegas every year. We haven't done it since our kid was born. It's the only thing I hate my wife for is that we don't go to Vegas anymore because she won't take Max there. I'm like, bring him. Who cares? It's a family thing now as much as anything.
Yeah.
She goes, no, he's not for Vegas. Anyway, I shouldn't get into my marital difficulties on the podcast. But I love that show. It is so Vegas. It is so cheese. It is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do think that. I think it started last year with Nashville. I think it's continuing this year with Vegas. And I hope whoever gets there in the future, if their city has something different that is a big part of their identity.
Blow it up. Blow it up.
Put it all over there. Like the Pirates at the All-Star game. Embrace what's going on.
I was ready to hate that, and I did.
Oh, it was awesome.
I know. I was so ready to hate that. Steve Poland, what personnel get etched onto the cup from a team? Is it just the players? Does GM, AGM, owners, scouts, who else? Is there a number limit? From Steve Poland.
Well, for players, it's 41 games in the regular season or one in the final, but you can always appeal to have extra people put on, like guys who got hurt.
Yeah, there's, if you've been injured all season, I believe it's 52 names is the max.
I have to check them. Is it 52?
I think it's 52.
There are people there all the time, like Charlotte Graham. She was the vice president of hockey administration in Denver with the Avalanche. She's on the cup twice. So I think it's the players, it's the team staff, the coaching staff, and then, you know, the owner, and then some people who are prominent in the office. And then, you know, they try to sneak somebody in there whose name gets, you know, cut out after a while. When someone notices and says, that's weird, like the family dog or whoever shouldn't be there.
Right. Yeah, I think the only hard, fast rule is 52. And there's a lot of gray after that as to who gets on there.
Yeah. But, you know, the one thing they're good at now is there's people whose names don't get on the cup, but teams give them a day with the cup.
Oh, of course.
Like scouts
and
stuff. Scouts, they get day with the cup. People around the office get days with the cup. I remember one guy told me, like, he was a director of, like, team services. He was in charge with the travel. Like, his name wasn't going on the cup, and they were like, you're getting a day with the cup.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Like, I think teams are really good at recognizing – okay, maybe we can't do that, but there's another way. And also a lot of teams do different tiers of rings. Like the Pittsburgh rings, I remember when they won the cup in 2009, their top tier rings were all valued at something like $28,000, right? But everybody got a ring, just not everybody got the top tier ring.
What would broadcasters get?
Broadcasters have gotten rings before. Yeah.
For sure.
I know they've gotten rings. I don't know if they've ever gotten a day with the cup or anything. I should ask some of those guys.
Didn't Pittsburgh guys get rings last year?
I'm sure they did. Absolutely,
I think they
did.
Yeah. I want to end on this one. This is a good idea. We really should do this, Elliot.
Okay.
From Rod Brown, would you ever consider doing a 31 Thoughts podcast episode dedicated to your favorite hockey/sports books? When the season's done, that's an awesome idea. Let's do that.
You know what? I can. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we just moved and I'm unpacking my library. And so the person who built our house did a really nice job. They built a bookshelf into the wall in what is my office. It doesn't fit all my books. I have to put some of them downstairs in bookshelves. But I'm basically dividing them into the books I want to have at my immediate disposal and the crap I can throw downstairs. I will make lists.
The crap that you say, I'll read it when I retire. So that's where all the huge James Joyce books go. Oh, yeah. I'll become a literary scholar when
I
retire.
I keep a Clockwork Orange upstairs. Like, I love that book. Like, example, the one I'm reading right now, it's a basketball book. It's by Brian Windhorst and Dave McMenamin, and they are the guys who cover the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they write all about how Cleveland and LeBron James reunited. It's a really fascinating story. I'll give you an example of one of the things that stood out to me. I was like, if I ran a team, like, this is really smart. So he leaves to Miami, and a few years later, there's a player on Cleveland who played with LeBron James – His name was, he was a center from Lithuania. His name was Zdrinas Ilgauskas. And so he was retiring, and at one time he was the franchise's leading scorer, I believe, until James passed him, or leading rebounder, or whatever he was. So what they did was they wanted to give him a night, and they wanted to honor him. But they made sure to do it on a night where the Heat were not playing, but would be like nearby, like whether it was Milwaukee or Chicago or Detroit, so that it would be short enough for LeBron James to come and be part of his friend's celebration. And their theory on that was because they would do such a bang-up job and have such a great ceremony that LeBron James would sit there and think, this could be for me one day. It wasn't the reason it happened, but he admitted later that it did have that effect on him.
I love stories like that. One of my favorite hockey stories, I'm not sure if I've told this one on the podcast before, involved Denny Potvin. Mm-hmm. We talked about this when Bill Torrey passed, about how when they drafted him first overall, there was, you know, this was when the NHL was competing against the WHA for contracts for players.
Yeah.
And there was a concern that he might go to the WHA, I want to say Edmonton, but I'm not 100% sure, for more money. And so what Bill Torrey did before the draft, right around the draft anyhow, as a way to entice Denny to sign with the Islanders and not go to the WHA, he traded Terry Crisp from the Islanders to the Philadelphia Flyers in exchange for Jean Potvin, Denny Potvin's brother. Wouldn't you love to come here and play with your brother, Denny? I think he was going to go there anyway, but as one of those, to your point, what can we do outside of just here's your contract to get you to stay? I love stories like
That's like Brian Burke refusing to trade Rob Niedermeyer to the New Jersey Devils just before 2007.
In order to get the services of
Scott Niedermeyer.
Got a cup in 207. Yeah. Yeah, let's do that sportsbook episode somewhere
down
there.
We'll do that. That's a good idea.
One. That's a good one.
Maybe
I like
Jeff
that. That
and from Emil, you guys will come over to my house and we'll tape it there. You can come in, Jeff. Emil will have to sit outside.
He's our producer. He can do it from the van in the parking lot. All right. Want to thank a lot of people. I want to thank all of our friends here at CJME in Regina for letting us use their studios for the last 2 weeks, specifically Ryan Moskal, who's been fantastic troubleshooting for us. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you to everyone here at CJME. Thanks for Robert Thomas for stopping by. Is that your first, no, you've spoken with Robert Thomas before.
Yes,
right?
Briefly at the draft, yep.
Right. Real nice kid, talented hockey player, bright future, St. Louis. You got a good one. Thanks to Robert Thomas of the Hamilton Bulldogs, Peggy Chapman of the Hamilton Bulldogs for putting that together, and Emil Delich for making this podcast always sound so tasty and doing things like saying, here's the outro music and here's the band. It is Band of Rascals, Holler. 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Jeff.
Tell me where, let me know. Hear me holler when you go. Tell me where, let me know. Hear me holler.